CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threat of Exchange with Sierra Bailey. Live on Cliff Central.
Oh, snap. They actually gave me a radio show. I can't believe it. Are we live? Is this thing on? Yes, we are live on Cliff Central.
Are live on Cliff Central.
This is The Threaded Exchange, the most probably unscripted show on Cliff Central. I can't believe Gareth actually allowed this to happen because it's about to get lit. Welcome to The Threaded Conversations. I am Siyabonga Beyile. And of course, I am anchored by Lisa Majozi, who is here to make sure that I don't talk too much crap on air and to make sure that I stay on brand. And of course, I've got the beautiful Lisa with me, who's showing me the reins of how I can do this radio thing. So Lisa, it's happening. We're here.
We are here and we're on Cliff Central and it's about to be crazy.
Yeah, I remember when we were chatting about the show and what we wanted it to be last year and the whole vision, and it's crazy how we've actually brought it together. And most people don't know the sting for the show is actually your voice.
It is my voice, so I hope you like it. I mean, I think it sounds pretty, what do you call it?
Sounds pretty radio.
It's pretty radio. For unradio I'm born people, with a radio voice.
As unradio people, I think that sounds pretty radio. And also for all the haters that hate my voice, guess what? I have a radio show. I'm live every single Monday from 11 till 12. The Threaded Exchange is progressive. It's cultured. It's brave. We're going to be talking to incredible creatives. As someone who is in the industry, I always find myself chatting and talking to young black people who just have incredible insights, and I feel that their insights never live on any platform. So I've decided that all my conversations that I have in a private capacity, I'm now going to bring on radio. And I think, you know, people should hear some of the insights that we have to offer, and people should hear what we have to say.
Okay, so obviously before you jump right into it, do you want to give people like an idea of this progressive, cultured, brave, just on especially the guests that you're going to have?
Yeah, definitely. I think first and foremost, we live in an exciting time in South Africa.
We do.
You know, the fact that there's a platform such as Cliff Central where we can do this, it's really exciting because we get to create content on various platforms, including Twitter, Instagram, blogging, and in all this big social media area, I feel that there's also some valuable content that's missing. A lot of depth is missing, and a lot of people still don't have access to those platforms. And that's why the Threaded Exchange is here. It's all about talking to young black Africans from different industries and connecting the golden thread of what makes them unique and how they're progressive and cultured and brave in their industries. And hopefully from these conversations, you also will be inspired. I'm not here on this show to be a radio person or to pretend like I am.
You're saying you're not a radio person.
I know.
But you're on the radio.
I am on the radio. Okay, I'm a radio person, but it's more importantly, the show is not about me. It's about giving the platform to young Africans who are doing incredible things for them to share their story, and most importantly, to engage in lit debates about the things that people don't want to debate about. You know, lit. For example, today we're going to be chatting to Asanda Sizani, and today's debate is the fact that she believes that minimalism is un-African. She says that minimalism waters what Africa is about, that Africa is about texture, it's about color, it's about vibrancy.
So that takes out every blogger in South Africa.
Exactly. So she's here to say minimalism is un-African. And I want to debate with her because I feel that magazines are dying. You know, and she's doing print and she's actually working on a new magazine. So we're going to have quite a cool debate about that. Asanda is here. Asanda, come in. Why are you late? I feel we should call her.
She's scared to come in.
She's actually very late. And I feel like we should call her out on that.
She looks stunning.
And I think on her intro, when we intro her, I want her to pronounce two things. So we'll be turning to Asanda on the other side of this.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with Sierra Bailey. Live on Cliff Central.
Welcome to the Threaded Exchange, hosted by Siyabonga Beyile. As I said to you before, we've got our very special guest today. Her name is Asanda Sizani. Many of you know her as a fashion editor, a curator, stylist, culturist, and someone who just loves everything that is African. Most importantly, she's my sister and one of my best friends. And her and I debate probably every single day about various things in the fashion industry. And I thought those debates deserve to be on this platform. And there's no other way to start the show than either with you, Asanda.
Are you ready, Asanda?
I'm ready.
Tell us, Puto Ngubani. Who are you? Tumamaklaha.
Tumamtoyeha uvambani. Shashan. Sioyo.
Nazo.
Yeah.
Nazo. That's right. How we start.
I know who I am.
Asanda, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks. Yeah, I'm so proud of you, I have to say. My heart is bursting right now for you, and I'm just really excited and happy that you invited me to be a part of your first with this. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Wow. That was...
I think you made him keep quiet.
Well, no, finish us some type of way. I'm really excited to have you here. Asanda, like... Everybody knows you as this fashion editor. You know, we see you on Instagram. You're beautiful. You're very African. But no one actually knows where the journey actually begins.
My story.
Tell us about your story. Asanda, ndiyakwazi ngumXhosa from Eastern Cape. But from umntana wasezilalini to this incredible fashion editor that's celebrated around the world. Connect the dots for us.
I'm not from Ezlalini though.
I'm near a city girl.
Ebisho. It's pretty much black suburb, if I call it that. I'm from Ebisho, and then I'm from Ekonce as well. I pretty much was born in Alice, Edikeni, where people know Forte University and places like that from Alice. And then I grew up in Ebisho in Kingalemstown. My family pretty much moved to Cape Town when I was in high school, towards the end of our high school years. So, yeah, I'm born and bred in the Eastern Cape.
In terms of fashion, where does that come from? Do you think growing up at Bisho in such a time inspired you to become, you know, the fashion editor and the fashion curator that we know you as today?
When I was about 6 years old, my mom says to me that I said to her, Mama, one day I'm going to work for Forrester Creations. So that story actually,
the bold and the beautiful.
Exactly. It makes me laugh, that story, because one, it shows that at such a young age, I was very aware of the fact that this fictional world in the soapy is actually the fashion industry. Yeah. I don't know how I picked that up or how I knew. And then secondly, it moves me because at such a young age, I knew exactly where my path would be, where my calling is, and what industry I would pursue and actively, go after and be involved in.
Yeah.
And you really went after it.
I did. I was surrounded by a lot of, you know, stylish women. You know, my mom was stylish in her way, and my mom was always that type of person who was like, cleanliness is next to godliness. Yeah. She's very much into, you know, being neat at all times. So whatever we're going through, growing up, whatever we had or did not have, at the end of the day, she always said, isepha yonikon. You know, you have to be clean. You have to be neat at all times.
And So that's how our parents are like, you can't say. That's how I'm very conscious of swearing, because I know my mom's listening in. I mean, Asanda, as you know, most man dingu threaded man from Otungwe. And I always tell, you know, people about my story about how, you know, I was also surrounded by incredibly strong women who are very closer.
Yeah.
And I think besides cleanliness for me, that's where I fell in love with my culture. Mm-hmm. You know, from omama betu, babemicimbini. So all those things, did that also inspire you growing up in terms of, because you're very African and you're always such an advocate for young African black creatives. So did that cultural element of you start with your mom as well?
It did, absolutely. I mean, I have, there's four of us in my family, and I think it really... the light basically switched on for me the day Yom Kidi of my eldest brother, where I saw my mom in full Xhosa regalia for the very first time. I mean, she always wore, you know, traditional pieces here and there, but that day when she was so proud and she was celebrating her heritage and her child, and this whole community came together and everyone was dressed, that's when I really picked up the art of dressing, how we mix these different textures and colors together as Africans, as Abaxhosa, and there was music and there was celebration, and I actually got to see her getting dressed, putting on her turban. There's an art to it.
Yes,
you don't just throw a turban on.
There's this, I don't know what to call it, Xhosa, but my mom used to take all these towels and then she used to layer them to build this round
for structure.
Yeah. And those kind of things we don't necessarily talk about, or that kind of artistry is being lost.
Exactly. It's an art, and even down to the pins that are used, you know, the colors that are used.
It's both spillied.
Exactly. And the thing is, you almost earn your way to being that turbaned woman, if there is such a word. When you're a young girl of a certain age and you don't have certain life experiences, you don't yet have access to certain lengths of a skirt and certain ways of wrapping your turban, and you don't get it yet and you don't understand it and value it enough. So I definitely picked up culture from there, and from then on I was like, I'm so proud to be umXhosa, and I'll always celebrate it in everything that I do.
Now let me ask you something. I'm going to get a bit risque now.
It's going to be goodness, spicy.
I mean, as someone who authentically is umXhosa, you know, umXhosa is a part of your DNA. It's something that you love, and it's something that, you know, has built, inspired a lot of your work. You know, in now with social media and now with sort of commercialism, we see references of our cultures all around the world.
Yeah.
And a lot of people adopting it. You know, one of our brothers, who's Xhosa, Oladuma, built his brand, but we know one of the struggles is people copying his work.
Yeah.
Now, when someone who's not Xhosa taking ownership of the culture of being umXhosa and it's inauthentic, how does that make you feel, and when does it become inauthentic for you?
The whole thing of appropriation.
Is it appreciation? Is it appropriation?
You know, it depends how it's actually done.
Yeah.
If it's done with respect, and it's with if it's done with the right amount of research, as in really immersing yourself in these cultures, speaking to the relevant people, being a part of it. You know, I love Ndebele culture, but I've made peace with the fact that I'll never be Ndebele. You know? And the thing is, I might style a shoot that's got like Asian references or Kenyan references or whatever other culture, but I'm never going to do it in that authentic way. I need to actually literally go to the Himba people and spend time with them, or at least do some sort of research in order for it to feel authentic, because there are certain nuances and certain subtleties that you can never get right. If you are not of that culture. Oladuma is very gracious, and he handles it very well, this whole thing of people copying him. It's happened with Pride. It's happened with so many brands where it's like the similarities, are just so evident.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does make me feel a certain way. But at the same time, it's like we're getting Africa out there.
Yeah. And I think for me, there's nothing that pisses me off more importantly than where I wear my Xhosa regalia, because I'm proud, and these beads are made by my mother and my grandmother in the Eastern Cape. And then someone has the nerve to comment on Instagram and tells me that I'm copying some other blogger. Like, what is that? Do you get what I'm saying? So we also live in an era where when we showcase our culture and who we are, someone will be like, yeah, but you're copying so-and-so. I mean, there's no such thing as being new in fashion. And there's no such thing as, there's nothing that we're wearing in this room that someone else hasn't worn. So why is it that we're obsessed with this thing of people want to own something that's not theirs? Or, you know, people want to own this concept of being African. Like, if I wear print, for example, people say I'm copying Trevor. But what is it that, you know, in us representing Africa, why are we stereotyping, let's say, boxing Asanda? Okay, that's Asanda's look. If anyone wears or dresses like Asanda, it's copying. So why is it, why do people have that mentality in terms of representing Africa?
I have no idea, because at the end of the day, there isn't one person that invented that type of thing. You know, it's how it's done. It's how you do it. You know, you and I can wear, we can wear the same jacket, but you're going to start it your way.
Exactly.
You know, and I can't really capture the essence of you and be authentic and, you know, do something exactly the way you do it and carry it exactly the way you do it. Because, you know, fashion style is also how you hold yourself together. It's how you wear it. It's not just about the clothing. You can walk into a store and there'll be the exact same repertoire of clothing, but we're not going to start it the same way.
Exactly, exactly. So you told us about the Eastern Cape growing up at Bisho, and you said, oh, Pumizlalini.
Yes.
So, Dilekaba on radio right now. But moving from the Eastern Cape, you moved to Cape Town.
Yeah.
You were at Drum Magazine. That's actually how I got to know Asanda, because I was in grade 8 or 9 at the time, and I think I sent you an email about interning. I still have the email.
I know, you showed me.
And did you respond, Asanda?
She actually did respond, but it was just that standard. Yeah,
response.
Passing you down to someone else. We know you want to do this thing, but Aisha, try there with other people.
No, so, not quite.
But we're family now. But tell me, you know, about going into Drum Magazine. What was that like for you, and how did that sort of define your journey in stepping up to our South Africa and beyond?
Okay, well, firstly, I have an art direction background. I actually never studied fashion. I studied art direction. I thought I'd be in advertising by that time. Did a bit of a stint at JWT, an ad agency. Of course, I was a junior. I was a nobody earning peanuts. I don't know what I was doing.
What is peanuts? Would you give us an insight? What is peanuts?
Typical intern assistant junior salary that allows
just enough.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Enough to get by. At least we were able to buy your toiletries and just like the essentials, really. But it was a great opportunity, obviously an eye opener. And then I was actually, while I was there, I used to write scripts for a math and science show called Hectic 99.
Oh, wow.
I was dabbling in various different things. I was styling at Jenny Button during the holidays. You know, my mom raised children that love working. You know, we had a work ethic. My sister and I both have been working since high school. During the holidays, we're not turning it up. We're not doing it. We're literally finding something to do. So I was working in store at Jenny Button. I was writing on a freelance basis. I was just immersing myself
in how are you earning peanuts?
Well, I was, though. It's a fact.
I think this is something that for those that want to step into fashion, for those who want to get into the industry, I want you to go and emphasize on the fact that you were interning for various jobs.
Yeah.
You were trying things that were not even within your skill set, but you adapted. Can you just tell us a bit more about that? What made you say, okay, I'm not just going to be styling for Jenny Button, but I'll go and I'll write a script for Hectic 99. I'll go and do this thing, even though it's not with even close to what I want to do, but I'll do it anyway. Just give us an insight into that.
Yeah, it's important to stay curious and to understand that you don't know everything, and in order to know a lot more than you perhaps know at that point is to actually put yourself, you know, in those positions. Sometimes you just need to go and pursue things that you like. I'm not actually sure of what I'm doing, but I'm going to get myself in these difficult positions anyway. I was curious. I wanted it so badly. And I think that whole thing of being multi-skilled and being diverse in what you do is so important. And right now in what I do, because I've actually gotten a little bit a taste of different aspects of the industry, I'm able to give more and to be of better service, because I know about a bit of advertising, a bit of branding, a bit of, you know, the writing, the production side of things. I know about styling, you know, I know about the modeling industry and various other things. But to cut a long story short, Chu gave me a call. It was before Tulap. It was before he was a designer. He was fashion editor of Fair Lady magazine at the time. I had interviewed Chu and various other fashion industry people, everyone from Jordan Dunn to David Lale, for a production called African Couture. It was an SABC 3 TV series. Another one of my gigs. So Chu gave me a call and he's like, you know what, Drum, have you heard Drum is looking for a fashion editor? I know it's not really, you know, it's print. It might not be, you know, what you want to do, but it's an entry into the magazine space. I think you'd be good at it. Try it out. So I applied, went through the proper channels, did the whole interview process, got a call, went in for my interview. Long story short, Izal Fenta, wherever you are, I love you and I appreciate you. She saw something in me, Sia. Yeah. Like, she saw something in me and she gave me a shot. And I was the youngest fashion editor of Drum Magazine. And that was a platform for me. It opened up, so many different avenues and so many opportunities for me. And it was a mainstream magazine.
Yeah. One of the biggest magazines in the country.
It's huge.
So it's
huge.
Massive. It's a weekly.
It's iconic.
And it's also tied to You Magazine, I'm correct. So some of the
same
stories
family.
Would run in some of the editorials would shoot for Drum.
And you know what? It that didn't actually happen. Back then, it didn't happen that your story, your Drum story would land up in You.
Oh, wow.
But I remember in a couple of months, I had a fashion editorial. It was an 80s-inspired fashion shoot. They ran it in You. Yeah. And it was like, whoa.
A big deal.
Yeah.
And some people don't actually know is that I still remember that one of Tony Gum, when I first saw Tony Gum in print, was in Drum. you had actually done an editorial where she was one of your models. Actually.
And she looked stunning.
And she looked stunning. I still remember. And even Tim, I think even Tim Morake, when he started out modeling, one of the first gigs was drum. And I think from early on in your career, you also started understanding the power of the platform that you have.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy how all of us young people who are now sort of, you know, on the forefront of the industry can trace some of our stories back to you.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's one of the things I appreciate about you is that from the early onset in your career, you always knew that for the platform that you have, it's very important to bring other young black creatives and find
a way of
collaborating with them. Guys, we are live on Cliff Central. Please tweet us your questions at Cliff Central or tweet me at Siyabongapeyile. It's 23 minutes past 11. We are continuing until 12, talking to Asanda Sizani. Please don't be afraid to WeChat us on 079-748-2090. We'll be back with Asanda on the other side of this.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threat of Exchange with Siyabongapeyile. Live on Cliff Central.
Welcome back to the Threaded Exchange. We are live with Asanda Sizani, and she's telling us about her story. She's now a celebrated fashion editor, an all-rounder in the fashion industry, and someone I think is low-key probably the most powerful person in fashion. And I know she'll disagree with me when I say that because she's so humble, but she is so connected to everything that happens in the industry, and she encapsulates what it means to be a modern African in terms of being a creative, being an editor, and just the way that she mixes her culture to her work and makes it more modern is incredible.
Mm.
I always talk about the fact that, Lisa, that I'm so tired of how Africa is always represented from the outside in and never the inside out. And Asanda's work epitomizes inside out.
I think
that's why she's here today.
Yeah, but that's what she's describing. A little bit of everything that you've done has led you here to, like, when I see your star, I see a little bit of the whole world.
Absolutely.
And it's a great reflection.
We're global Africans at the end of the day. You know, we're born here. Our roots are here. Everything of ours stems from here. But at the end of the day, you need to have an eye that's outside of these shores. You need to be able to travel, whether it's physically or through your imagination or through film and music and art and design and books, whatever it is, make sure that you have a global view about all things.
Yeah, your mind is to stay open.
Mm.
Yeah. I think we're going to focus probably 10 more minutes to your story because I want to get to our debate. Because I quote, being minimalism is un-African.
I
believe that Africa is vibrant. It's about color. It's about texture. And when you bring in minimalism, you sort of water that down. So that's what you and I, you're going to give me an insight into that statement that you made to me via WhatsApp this morning. But for me, it's really important for people to know your journey and to appreciate how incredible you are and the work that you do. Now, you are at Drum Magazine.
Mm.
Does Al give you a call to say, hey, we want you to come over? How did Al happen? And from Al, you are now at Ndalo Media. So can you just take us briefly through that journey? And I want to also
touch on the whole minimalism.
I actually also want to touch on the fact that Beyonce's sister, Solange, you can call her one of your friends.
I suddenly you changed everyone's lives with that.
So I want to also talk about that historic moment between you and Solange. Drum.
Yes. Okay, so Izal gives me this job and I'm thrown in the deep end because I'd used to fashion editing on other platforms, but then never for print. I don't know how a magazine actually runs. Whenever I read a magazine, I didn't read it with the, more in depth.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand it and the processes and all of that. So that was where I actually learned so much. And I, of course, stayed curious and I asked questions. And I already had an idea of how I was going to, of course, you know, stick to the Drum DNA, bear in mind who my reader is, make fashion accessible, but at the same time, elevate it. Mm. And I wanted to bring in all of my people. I wanted to be that person that is kind of like the connection, basically. I wanted
the plug.
If there was a new model, I wanted them first in Drum. If there was some new up-and-coming designer, I mean, I was just always going to design in Daba. I was going to exhibitions. I was going to anything creative, anything that would keep me inspired. And I used to walk a lot. Sometimes during lunch break, I would just literally take a walk down to in Cape Town, down to the galleries, and just walk around and just look at art for 2 hours and then come back. I've got a story, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, people like Annalisa and Tony Gum and Head Honcho, I guess, the first, you know, fashion editor put them on the pages, and it was just such a great platform. And I would walk into people's houses and I'd see Drum. And it was just this magazine that was everywhere, and I'd see my name everywhere, and it was like, wow, this is actually an important platform, and I need to make sure that I up my game. And then one day, I'm in Durban. No, I was in Joburg during Fashion Week. I get a call. It was Jenna Roberts, the then deputy editor of Elle magazine, and I was being offered fashion editor of Elle. I was getting dressed.
How does that offer happen? Yeah. Is that an SMS? Is that a call?
It was a call.
It was a call.
Was,
we want you to be
fashion editor.
It was a call. Yeah.
Damn.
And I cried, Sia, I don't know, probably for a good 2 hours. It was just such a big moment for me, because I remembered the first international publication that I picked up when I was in high school in King Williamstown was Elle. And I remember looking at the cover, and Primrose Muluandua was on the cover of Elle SA. She was the new face of L'Oreal. She was being celebrated. And I was like, this girl looks like us, you know?
Yeah.
Yet she's on the cover of this magazine. And I knew what that meant. And I was just staring at it. And I bought the magazine. And I was like, one day I'm going to work for this magazine.
That's brilliant.
I knew it. I just knew it. So when that call came years later, you know, unprompted, completely unplanned for. I was going, you know, about my, you know, career, I guess, and I was being offered an opportunity to work for this global fashion brand, and at last I'd get to be more of me and speak fashion in a more articulate way. I'd be able to create visual stories that are inspirational as well as aspirational.
Yes.
So it was a huge moment, and I really, really cried, and I was so thankful and very honored to have that time.
Yeah. Wow, that's incredible. So just going back, the fact that, you know, Elle magazine was the first magazine that you picked up, and years later, you're now being offered a position to be the fashion
first
editor.
First black
editor of Elle magazine. During your time at Elle, to be in the position that you were in an environment that had, you know, a lot of white people, you know, who generally built a DNA of how this magazine runs and how it should work. And you are this, you know, young black girl from Ebisho who's come into the space and who wants to occupy the space in a way that is present, in a way that it could be felt, and in a way that it could impact other young black girls who had the same dream. How was that experience for you, and how, and what were the challenges to be in that position?
Well, I felt a sense of responsibility, for sure, to represent who we were about. You know, there would be times where it's like, that's a little bit out of touch. Really? We're going to put so-and-so on the cover? Really? We're going to feature so-and-so? You know, so you had to fight for certain decisions, and it's not easy. You know, you're in this boardroom, and of course, you know, you have to respect that these people have been in the game, you know, of this type of, you know, this caliber of a magazine for a very long time, and you need to respect that. But at the same time, I felt like there are some things that I know that I can also bring to the table. But I think also just my approach is, it's not a forceful approach, and it will be just in subtle ways. I remember being, you know, introducing Maxhosa onto the L pages. It was the first time Maxhosa had been on those pages. And, you know, certain things like that, where it would, I'd do things like, you know, gender fluidity on the pages. I'd tell more African and more local type of stories. I'd make sure that each story has a local element to it, as well as it being sensitive to international advertisers and all of that. It wasn't easy, but, you know, the team was strong, and the team was very inspired and very inspiring. And yeah, it was an awesome time.
Cool. I want to get into the first debate. You know, most of the time, I say this to you on a daily basis, where I'll send you a picture of the cover and I'll be like, what the fuck is happening? Sorry for my language. I'll be like, what the fuck is actually happening? And you just gave us a bit of light about how, you know, there's a system that you come into that sometimes you felt that this system was out of touch. Now, just getting a bit into that, when it comes to fashion in South Africa, I always feel that the magazines that I hear don't represent the current times of what is actually happening. What do you think causes that disjoint? So when I see an Elle magazine and it's Kristen Stewart on the cover, I'm just like, who cares about her? Or why is she there? Can you give us an insight into what happens when a cover has been chosen, and why does it most of the time it misses the market completely?
Well, sometimes the decision lies with advertising. You know, if maybe so-and-so is the face of Cartier or whatever brand, and that brand is an advertiser, you know,
they get the space.
So an element of it is money. So
there is that element.
So if Cartier is an advertiser in Asanda's magazine, and I'm the face of Cartier, Cartier can say to your magazine, listen, you need to put this guy on the cover and we'll pay for it.
Yeah, one cover. And some people actually buy covers, hey?
Really?
Like, wow.
Like Sia will be like, I want to be on the cover.
I'll write the check.
I want a Destiny Man cover, son. I'm going to buy that cover. So money is an element. What is the other element of it?
Also, I mean, when it's an international magazine, I mean, with Elle, there's over 40 Elles, international Elles around the world, about 42 or so different Elles. So there'd be, you know, certain cover stars that just have to run, you know, worldwide. If maybe it's a Beyonce cover, then maybe like you will have at the exact same time four different Elle publications have that cover. Yeah. Maybe SA will choose a different shot. It won't be that exact shot that maybe Canada used or whatever country used. But, you know, there's certain things when it's an international publication just to keep that signature throughout and that standard, I guess, of that magazine.
Yeah.
And then a local magazine will have like X amount of local cover stars that they can have in a year. And, you know, of course, it's having to motivate because at the end of the day, you're reporting to Paris or reporting to whoever. And you'd have to fight as a local publication, fight for that cover choice. I remember the 1 year LSA, we had Bonang as a cover, and it was a Vuitton cover. They paid for it. It was shot in New York, and it was using the Yayoi Kusama collection because Vuitton was launching Kusama that year, and they're an advertiser.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. So, you know, in the South African magazine space, we live in such an incredible time because we've got, you know, all the international titles, which I'm going to go and say that I feel like they're dying. And you have, you know, local titles that are starting to lead the pack, such as Destiny and Destiny Man, which you now work with. You know, what is the difference? You know, by the way, she's now the fashion editor of Destiny. Now, tell me, what is the biggest challenges moving from an Elle magazine that is a global brand that is known all around the world to moving to Destiny magazine, which is a proudly African brand? What are the differences for you? And do you feel that you fitted better, more into Destiny since your vision is about Africa and celebrating Africans?
Well, for me, it was a strategic move because I wanted to get into Ndalo Media. So it was a Ndalo Media decision as opposed to any one publication. Any media house, whether it's Condé Nast or whether it's, you know, New Media or whatever, has various publications. And, you know, when you're like, I want to get into Ndalo Media, you see Kanye Dlomo. She's an icon. She's a black woman.
Yeah.
She's, you know, started this media empire, growing media empire. By the way, there's lots to expect from Ndalo Media this year.
We're going to get it. To that, because I want to know what you're going to be insane.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
So, and you're like, I want access to someone that's as reputable and globally, you know, respected as Kanye. She's a businesswoman above all else. I don't know if I'm there yet, as you know, in terms of having that level of business acumen and in terms of having those connections, etc. I want to learn from someone like her. So, it was, you know, led by that, wanting to get into Ndalo Media. And of course, it's a business magazine. It's a serious magazine. We get to shoot politicians and businessmen, just high profile people. And it was like, you know what, at the end of the day, yes, I've done and worked with style brands and companies, but you want to mix style with substance.
Mm. Yeah.
So a combination of the two is just very, very powerful.
Yeah. I also want to say, I mean, I also, this is something that you taught me where growing up, still am growing up, but something that you taught me where I'd come to you and complain about, you know, this certain magazine has this person on the cover. I don't know why. Why do, you know, white-owned publications not pay attention to black creatives? Why isn't a Ricky Rick on a GQ cover? You know, it's something I used to tell you, and you always tell me, why don't you just build your own magazine and put your Africans on the cover?
I said create.
Create, exactly. Mm. You always believe that one, as Africans, instead of complaining, let's create. If we feel that an L magazine is not putting us on the cover, let's create our own magazine and put our people on the cover. Do you think that's the future of South African magazines in terms of, you know, Destiny? Kanye Lom was one of those innovators that said, you know what, all these other publications won't celebrate black people or various black people from different industries as much as I want them to be celebrated. So I'm going to build Destiny.
Yeah.
So do you think that's where the future is for us Africans in terms of print, to build our own more
absolutely,
publications?
Absolutely. And it goes, it's only also for you. I mean, these words that I shared with you are actually, you know, paraphrase from words that Oluchi told me. I was interviewing her the 1 year, and she was talking about Africa's Next Top Model. At the time, she was going to be the Tara of Africa's Next Top Model, and it was the first time it was happening. And she was like, you know what, it's so easy to complain about the lack of this in the industry, or how this is run, how there isn't enough of this, but it's harder to actually create. So she decided she's going to spearhead the whole thing and just run after it and go for it. So absolutely, that's what one of the things I admire about Kanye, for example, in that she was like, she saw a gap in the market in terms of what Destiny and, you know, Sabona, all the magazines that Ndalo Media publishes. And she was like, let me actually create my own empire and start it from scratch. And, you know, I want to build a legacy with this. So whatever gap you see in the market, whether you feel there isn't enough of, you know, platforms or magazines that speak to, you know, the teen market, for example, or someone that like me, or I don't see enough hair magazines, or I don't see something that addresses these types of issues, create it.
Yeah, I think that's a lesson there. So to all you creatives that are listening in, if you're at fashion school, whether you're in an advertising school, film school, I think that's the mentality that we should adopt, is that we should stop waiting for people to put us on. There's this whole idea that, you know, I signed as a fashion editor of Destiny. I'm a
student.
She's
obliged. I have to.
You know, as young black creatives, we have that mentality of, Uba Asan has to put us on.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like a responsibility.
Or we have that mentality of, oh, Asana does this, I need to copy her. You know, and I think with what you just said, I think there's two lessons to be learned there. I think more, as Africans, we need to create more.
Yeah.
I think there's not enough magazines, there's not enough content, you know, to sit back and be comfortable. I mean, when I went to New York, there's a whole entire magazine about hair. You know, there's all these different things that we are not talking about. You know, there's sustainable fashion. Who's talking about that? Who's blogging about that and making it cool? You know, so there's all these different topics that have not yet been tackled as Africans.
It's not easy, though. It's not easy. And there's a whole lot of market research that goes into it. And a lot of people have actually started magazines and failed.
Yes.
You know? And decided I'm never going back again. And I know people that started magazines, they failed. They started another one again.
Yeah.
And it, you know, became, so the market is also very, very strange. And it's not a great time in print, as we know as well. So it's a risk. It's a huge risk to create anything. But absolutely still go for it.
With digital, you know that I'm very digital.
You guys are on opposite spectrums.
We are on opposite spectrums. What do you think of the fashion digital space in South Africa? Ooh. And do you think it puts your job at risk? Do you think I'm putting your job at risk?
Oh.
No.
I mean, I'm in men's fashion, but do you think, I'm not talking about me specifically, but with all these fashion bloggers and, you know, digital moving fast, and now, you know, we have to wait for a whole month for a new issue of, you know, the next issue of a magazine.
And at the same time, print, you work 3 months in advance.
Exactly. So how are you keeping up, you know, with that, keeping in mind that digital is happening? And do you think digital is destroying magazines or empowering them?
It's forcing them to level up, for sure. You know, it's, you know, I think maybe a decade or however many years ago, no one anticipated this shift. And it's certainly here. And now the challenge is for magazines to create unique content for online and then have the print as well in support of, you know, that whole messaging, you know, they have to live together. They have to live together. And I mean, there's amazing people doing awesome things in the digital space. I'm very proud of what you're about to launch, by the way.
Thank you.
no one's in competition, I think. There's room for everyone. There's room for everyone. And I mean, this is the digital age and we have to embrace it.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you, I mean, You, as I said earlier, you're one of the people that I low key feel like is the most powerful person in fashion in South Africa. Do you feel there's a space for bloggers? Do you like bloggers? If you could choose whether bloggers existed or didn't exist, do you think bloggers have a place in fashion?
You know, Pharrell, when he was asked about his hats, you know, when he used to wear those big hats, and suddenly someone was like, you're not wearing those hats anymore, you're into poor boy cats and whatever. He's like, it was for that time, you know. So I feel like the whole blogger movement, it had a time. It was for that time. There were really, really big, influential bloggers, I think. Maybe there are still some, you know, that really have a voice. Because the thing is, for me, it's like, what do you really have to say? What is your point of view? And these are words that are posed at me when I was at Elle, actually. And I told Erla, our sub-editor, I said to her, I'm going to start a blog. Because I was looking at everyone else with a blog. And she said to me, what do you have to say?
What's your blog about?
What do you have to say? And I really had to scale back and think about that. You know, what is my point of view? What of importance, what's going to really move the industry forward, what's going to change things about what I'm going to create on this platform. Do I need it? Are there other avenues maybe that I can explore, that I can be maybe of better use? As you know, there's people that are killing it, you know, in that space. Do I think that I can measure up to what they're doing? So it was a lot of self introspection as well. I don't know if I follow a lot of bloggers right now. But I certainly, you know, go to Business of Fashion and, things like that. But not one specific blogger, because I find like also a lot of the blogs right now, it's a person sharing their outfit of the day. And it's like, okay, cool, but now what? So what? If you're wearing this top and this jacket and these pants, and are you educating us about the textiles and, you know, the heritage of these brands and the stories and how they're made? Are you allowing us to meet the makers of these garments? Are you taking us behind the scenes? Are you giving us any valuable information? You know, it doesn't really matter what you're wearing.
I think that's my biggest hack about this whole blogging. I mean, I'm one of the products of blogging, but something that I really, really hate is the fact that, like, people want to blog for the sake of being cool and creating cool Instagrams, but they're not saying anything. You know, it's easy with, you know, with Instagram today, it's easy for us to all package ourselves a certain way and get thousands of followers. But most importantly, what is your point of view? So to someone out there who wants to be a blogger or enter fashion space, don't be a blogger because of the perks that you assume come with blogging. But what is it that you're sharing? What is it that you're teaching? What insight are you giving us that someone else isn't already giving us? And also, I always feel that being a blogger is not, I know it's going to sound very risque to say this, but it's not a career. And what I mean,
it's not your job.
So social media is not a real thing. Like, for me, when someone's like, I'm a social media influencer, I'm like, cool, but what do you actually do? Because I see social media as a way of enhancing what you already do without social media. So you're a fashion editor, and usually your Instagram is your mood board of what you enter at the period of time. I work as a stylist doing men's fashion, and I feel that I should educate men to dress better and be better. And so my Instagram highlights the work that I do as the threaded man. So, and now we're in a space where there's a lot of bloggers, but it's all actually air and hype. There is no point of view. And I think for me, that's why I support your statement, where as a blogger, you need to evolve into something. You can't be talking about what you're wearing forever.
Your blog just needs to amplify what you're doing.
You know, I think we've passed the stage. I was talking to Lisa the other day, and I was saying I haven't posted an actual outfit picture. I don't know in how long.
A blogger, because
I've passed that stage now of telling people I'm wearing this today. It's boring, number one. And number two is, what is it that you're sharing? What insight are you giving beyond the Instagram?
And they are giving that brand free publicity on the platforms, because you have worth. as yeah. well. You have your own value and your own following.
And the coolest thing is, Ashanda, you shared a video of Anna Winter, who was speaking at the Oxford Union, and she said that in this day and age, it's easy to become famous because of social media, mm-hmm. but it's even more challenging to be famous for the work that you do and the depth mm-hmm. that you bring into the space.
Yeah.
What can you give an insight into? Because I remember you had a whole rant on my WhatsApp about that exact statement, but I feel that people need to hear your insight into that.
Mm. It goes back to exactly what you're saying. Like, what is your worth, really? What are you actually saying? It's all about substance for me. It's not only about showcasing your apparent style, but it's like, what do you actually have to bring to the table? With all of that in mind, I love, you know, Anna Wintour's, you know, way of thinking, and she's cultivating a generation of, you know, thinkers and doers and people that actually want to make a change and move the industry forward. And that's what it's about. I don't understand this whole thing of, you know, you want to be famous quickly, you know, and you want brands to send you free products. Then what? You know, I'm not in this for the goodie bag.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And it's bigger than the goodie bag.
Yeah, and I couldn't care less, you know, whether someone sends me something or not. At the end of the day, it's about the work. It's about, you know, I mean, I sat as a young girl dreaming for these platforms and these opportunities and for these ideas that I always had in my head to somehow be, you know, to gain a platform and to be appreciated. And, you know, I wanted an outlet. I never had a creative outlet. So it's absolutely about the work for me. And if it allows you to be Insta famous, then, you know, that should come naturally. But it's not something that one should be pursuing as a first, you know, thing.
I agree completely. As a child, my mom always used to say, empty vessels make a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. And that's, it teaches you substance of character.
Yeah.
Like the character of substance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's 10 to 12. I can't believe we almost lost an hour on the show. It's actually a thing.
Salon. It's about being a radio person. Yes. I want to hear about Salon. So we can go quickly.
But I think we're going to talk about Salon. We're going to also talk about the fact that you believe that minimalism is an African. And we're going to wrap up the show on the other side of this.
Awesome.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threat of Exchange with CRB. Live on Cliff Central.
If you had just tuned in, you are with Sia Beile on a very, very new show on Cliff Central called The Threaded Exchange. I'm here today with most beautiful women, I believe. I'm in great company. I'm with Lisa. And of course, our guest for today, Ashanda Sizani, who's been telling us about her journey, also giving us insight into the work that she does and sharing her thoughts about bloggers, about the internet space, whether or not magazines are dying or magazines have a future, and whether or not what creates, you know, some one, not necessarily what creates, but how can you have more of a presence in the industry? And as she shared before, you need to have a point of perspective. You need to give insight into something that people don't already know or that you feel people should get to know better. You know, whether or not you're going to be a stylist, whether or not you want to be a blogger, whether or not you want to be a designer, it's very, very important. If you're going to come into the space, you need to build what it is that you want to communicate. You can't come into the space wanting to be exactly like Ashanda Sizani. There's already an Ashanda Sizani. There can never be another one. Many have tried, but have failed. I've tried. I tried to be Ashanda Sizani.
You were never going to get there.
Brother, it didn't work. It didn't work at all. I mean, I couldn't even match to the hairstyles, so I failed. So don't fail trying to be someone else. Rather fail and keep trying, trying to be yourself. So you worked with Solange Knowles, as you heard, Beyonce is expecting twins. Tell us about your relationship with Solange. I mean, I remember you were a fashion editor, then all of a sudden there's an Elle cover, and then you're chilling with Tina Knowles and Solange on Instagram. Jay.
Just Jay. Just in a taxi.
The same phone that calls Beyonce calls you. Tell us about that.
Okay, so I got a call from someone inviting me to a small fashion week in Botswana, right? I was still fashion editor at Elle. So they're trying to convince me to attend this thing. And they said, Romaila was going to be there. Aretha Mujai is going to be there. Solange is possibly going to be there. So I was like, okay, sign me up, I'm there. Anyway, I went to the thing, no Solange. But I had a great time with Oroma and all of that. So I came back, and Oroma at the time lived in New York, and she was friends with, you know, Solange, and she moved in those circles. To cut a long story short, I was speaking to Oroma, and at the same time, Solange was the face of Rimmel. So I was like, you know what, let me actually tell someone here at work. I went and told my superiors about, you know, Solange, and she was supposed to have come to BOTS apparently. How about, you know, pitching something, you know, for a cover. And I thought at the time, wow, she'd actually be an amazing Al cover. She's already an Al girl. If you think of what that person embodies and who they are, the style with substance, being an individual and being unique. And she just ticked every single box. So anyway, luckily, they ran with the idea, spoke to the brand, made things work, and in no time, Solange was flying in Cape Town. So she arrived, and we had a fitting with her, and yeah, the Al cover happened. And what is great about that cover, and what makes it so special, it was that it was Solange at that point in her life where she was telling me, you know what, my record labels dropped me. I'm independent. Oh, wow. Yeah, she was going through something, but at the same time, in terms of her personal life, she was in such a great place. She was happy to be there. She came with Jacine Christophe, and yeah, we shot the cover, and it was local designers, Tarte, Peacherlick.
So could we say, I mean, a lot of people have heard the seat at the table and have seen the visuals, and I see a lot of African, a lot of African references and African dialogue, and also just being pro-black, the album. Do you think that phase in her career started then? Do you think that could have been the early traces of what she is now?
I remember in terms of the mag, we had an itinerary that was, you know, drawn up by the powers that be for her, things to do because she was going to be in Cape Town for a couple of days, and moving her from one hotel to the next for security reasons and all of that. And you know what? Literally day one, she was like, where are the people? That was actually her. She takes out her phone. It's cracked. The entire screen is cracked. It had fallen, you know, whatever. So she takes out, she asked for my number, says, you know what, I'm shooting, you know, a video. And there wasn't really 100%, you know, clear plan for the video and all of that. And there were no rig permits and things like that. But anyway, she invited me to be a part of the shoot. And anyway, I couldn't go on the first day. I was going to Durban, but immediately when I landed, I went straight to a hotel. Arrived there, Solange is sleeping. Went home, came back later, and we went to Gwalanga, started shooting Losing You, the music video. It was amazing. Stunning. And then went to Khayelitsha. It was just like a whole, you know, missioning around Cape Town, basically. What was great about that time is that Solange introduced me to the Italian photojournalist, Daniel Tamani. He's based in Milan. He was there. Ty Hunter was there. Tina Knowles was
there. So you've known Ty Hunter.
We're chilling in a taxi. and Ty had this amazing wardrobe, Givenchy clothing and Alaya shoes. It was just like incredible. And I also threw in, you know, some textiles here and there. We got to be a part of that. And what was great about that, one of the scenes is that all of us were literally on our hands and knees helping because we knew the situation. We knew that, you know, Solange's friends had come through. People had come all the way from New York or from wherever they came from to make this video work. So we're cutting, you know, posters up and pasting things on the wall, mopping floors, you know, sweeping. Yeah, because you're like, you know, singabantu bamnyama, and we want to advance each other and help each other out. And I'm also grateful to be here as well. So, we worked, and it was amazing. So that's how we met. So some of the Congolese sapiers were on that shoot as well, because Solange had called Danielle and said, I love your book, Gentlemen of Bakongo, and inspired by the visuals in that book. And she was like, please organize, you know, for some of them to come through to this shoot. And Danielle came through, and that's how I met him. And then he later asked me to write the Africa chapter in his next book after that day.
Wow, that's incredible. Right. Guys, can you believe it? It's almost the end of the show. I'm literally sad right now. Like, time flies when you are engaging in incredible conversation.
When you're having fun.
Yes, I'm having lots of fun.
I have to say that I love your collaboration with Topshop.
Thank you.
Stunning.
Thank you.
I'm just trying to get the figure for it. Just yet.
Asanda, in closing, I'm sorry. I felt like there's so many things that we could discuss on the show. But in closing, you know, there's a lot of young black girls, number one, that are listening to you right now from Africa to the rest of the world, who have dreams of being in the fashion space, who feel that the space that we're in is so out of place for them, or it feels like the platform is too far out for them to reach it. You know, you coming from Obisha at such humble beginnings and to have built such an incredible career, you know, what can you say to them? What message would you like for them to hear? And this recording is going to be a podcast. It's going to live for many years to come. And if someone in 5 years or even in 100 years, when they listen to what you have to say right now, what message do you have for them?
Never lose hope. Don't give up. Pursue your passions. Be strong in your convictions and you will make it. Just very, very shortly, about my background, there were times when there wasn't much, you know, available to us. There was a point when my whole family, we all lived in one bedroom in this other family's home, and we all lived in this bedroom. There were times when, you know, we didn't have school shoes. There were times when we didn't have much to eat. We didn't have lunch boxes. We'd just go to school. You know, there wasn't, you know, I didn't grow up with a silver spoon. I didn't grow up knowing anything about these industries and these brands, and how to get from this level to the next and all of that. It's been by grace. So trust your gut and believe that whatever it is that you have been called to do, it will materialize, it will happen, and you'll be a blessing because of it.
There it is, guys. That's how we end the show. I don't think I have much to say, but thank you for tuning in. This is The Threaded Exchange, and this is the kind of show that we're building, where we bring inspiring Africans who are changing, you know, the African narrative, who are progressive, who are cultured, and who are brave. And next week, we're going to have another African who's going to be telling us their story. Please don't stop tweeting. Tweet us. Let us know what you think. Let us know who you feel we should have on the show. I'm Siyabonga Beyile, signing out from The Thread Exchange. Any last words, Lisa?
I've got nothing. Asanda, you're amazing.
Thank you guys for tuning in. Ciao, ciao.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Threaded Exchange with CRB. Live on Cliff Central.
CliffCentral.com.